Well, my name is Charlie Dravesky, and I was born March 8th, 1944, in Bridgeport, Connecticut. And the first 12 years of my life, I spent living in a project. Well, my name is Charlie Dravesky, and I was born March 8th, 1944, in Bridgeport, Connecticut. And the first 12 years of my life, I spent living in a project called Success Park, oddly enough. And it was a typical sort of project, not like a ghetto apartment building kind of thing, but buildings of 8 or 10 sort of families. The neighborhood was typical East Coast working class, maybe not typical, a few black families, but mostly Eastern European, Italian, you know, just sort of working class kind of folks. And I lived there till I was 12 years old. I can remember sitting on the back steps of our building, listening to a portable radio and listening to the song Shaboom by the Chords. And I was probably in 55 or 56, so I was, you know, 11 years old. And I can remember thinking that I've never heard a song like this before. You know, we were used to hearing Perry Como and Patti Page and, you know, all that white pop stuff, you know. And the other thing that kind of happened at the same time is that TV became kind of popular. And so, you know, those were the songs that were being played on whatever it was, Your Hit Parade or something like that. And then we heard this song, and I can remember sitting there with a couple of other kids going, wow, I never heard a song like that before. And not too soon after that, we moved out of the project into the burbs in the next town over. And it was a whole different ball game, you know. It was mostly white kids, a few Polish, Czechoslovakian, Italian kids, but, you know, they were just kind of different, you know, because they were all in the burbs. And I was the new guy in town. I not only went from elementary school to junior high school, but I changed towns and changed sort of profiles of kids. Anyway, what happened was, so we're talking about 1957, 58 now, and that was when that was when rock and roll really got to be popular. You know, I can remember in junior high school, they would have this dance with the girls, you know, and they would play various hit records at the time. And I mean, it was nice to be around, you know, members of the opposite sex, but we always kind of groaned when we walked down the hall and saw the gym was open and we knew we were going to have to dance with the girls. And I guess, you know, I was the type of personality that would be one of the first to go across that sort of chasm of the empty gym floor and ask a girl to dance. Of course, everybody's eyes were on you. Whether she would accept, whether she would turn you down, and what you would do, whether you would ask somebody else to dance and everyone knowing you got turned down, or just kind of shrug your shoulders and walk back across the empty gym floor, which I had to do a few times. The lyrics of the songs never really sort of impacted upon me. Until I heard some straight R&B, and I knew that there were some double entendres there. I didn't know at the time what that term meant, and I probably had never heard the term, but I knew they were talking about something other than the songs that I'd heard in the past. You know, there were some references there to something that I was just sort of becoming aware of. I grew up listening to Alan Freed when he was on the radio in New York, and I can remember him playing different versions of the songs that were being played on other radio stations, namely the original versions by the black groups. And for some reason, I liked those versions better. And it ultimately, 25 or 30 years later, those are the versions I'm playing on Saturday night. But that's kind of, you know, the songs that I grew up with were the black R&B songs. They were popular as far as, you know, the doo-wop groups go. And then some of the Italian groups on the East Coast, you know, I listened to them, but mostly it wasn't the white pop versions. And that's what I listened to until I got out of high school in 1962. Then I went in the Navy in 63, and maybe because that was the kind of music I listened to when I was a teenager, I started hanging around with mostly black guys in the Navy, because I would hear them playing the same songs that I listened to when I was a kid. And it also seemed like they were having a better time in life. I can remember being in a barracks with, I don't know, 70, 80, 90 other guys, and there was a guy playing the Impressions' greatest hits on his little portable record player. And I can remember many nights when I was in the Navy falling asleep listening to Curtis Mayfield and the Impressions.
Let me take a pause for a second. I want to ask these guys close all
the facility. Anyway.
So let me, before you leave the your teenager days, before you get into the Navy and stuff, what about your relationship with the music or your enthusiasm for the music? Did it affect your relationship with your parents, siblings? What was that dynamic like? Because we hear so much about, you know, the rock and roll and rhythm and blues stations and kids listening to black artists and their parents didn't want them to and that sort of thing. Did you ever experience any of that dynamic?
No, actually, I never did. I can remember listening to Alan Freed alone at night in my room, you know, and my parents never came in and said, you know, turn that off or I don't want you listening to that stuff. My dad worked in a factory with a lot of black guys, and one of the very few words of wisdom I ever got from my father was that no one is better than anybody else. So, so that kind of attitude, like, we don't want you listening to music that black groups are singing or anything like that, that never happened in my house. As far as interaction with my peers, it was a good excuse to, like, get together with girls and listen to records. You know, that was a nice little angle. You know, and then of course there was always dancing, which was kind of new and different, you know, holding on to a member of the opposite sex. And the music was sort of the motivation for doing that, you know, and then of course one thing leads to another and, you know, and I can remember actually when I was in high school playing disc jockey in my friend's basement, and he had a turntable and a microphone, and you know, there'd be one guy and his girlfriend laying on one couch, and then the other guy and his girlfriend laying on the other couch, and I'd be playing records and sending out dedications, you know. I guess more into playing records than what they were doing on the couches. But, you know, it was, I think the music was kind of a glue at the time, which sort of held members of the opposite sex together when we really didn't know what the hell we were doing.
So describe then the evolution. You're the classic baby boomer, you know, as, in terms of timing. Born in 44, teenager when rock and roll hit, and then moving up to see all its changes through the years. What are maybe the sharpest pictures along the way that you can remember about noting the big developments, and you know them pretty well, I guess. So, that doesn't mean that to suggest that they all had a big impact on you, but pick out some that you think did.
Actually, most of them didn't have an impact at all, because I was in the Navy until 1967, and I didn't know anything about the Beatles. When I got out of the Navy, I went home, and I can remember, you know, a couple of girls I knew in high school telling me about the Beatles, and I'd never heard of them, never heard of them. I was listening to black stations in Washington, D.C. I was listening to black and gospel stations coming out of Baltimore and Southern Maryland, and I was listening to you know, Motown, R&B, The Temptations, all of those groups. And I didn't know anything about the British invasion. I'd never heard the groups. And then when I heard them, some of them sounded okay, you know. But then when I saw them on TV, I thought most of those British groups or the British wannabe groups were a joke. You know, they looked stupid. They didn't have matching sharkskin suits. They had no choreography. And they, you know, didn't sound as slick as a lot of the black groups I was listening to. And I just ended up not liking that sound of white rock and roll. And I still don't relate to it very much at all. You know, my knowledge... My knowledge of music is pretty much more involved with R&B groups than white rock and roll groups. I think, as we all do, we relate and sort of place incidents in our past in connection with what song we were listening to at the time. I can remember driving back to the Navy base, listening to the Supremes on the car radio in probably 1965, 1966. You know, so I think we all kind of remember what we were doing in association with a song we were listening to at the time.
Okay, this is a tough one then. Are there particular songs or particular artists? I mean, you've mentioned a couple, but I'm wondering if there's an artist that, you know, kind of gives you goosebumps or moves you in a certain way that rises them above the pack, and or a song that does the same thing.
Smokey Robinson wrote a lot of songs, from what I've heard, out of his split with his wife at the time. And those emotions come out. And I think that no matter what you're going through with your significant other at the time, Smokey Robinson has written a song about that situation. It was important to me then. His songs are important to me now. just because of his sort of choice of words and, you know, the overall sort of sound of the song. But when you listen and certainly read the words to the songs that he's written, they're very, very emotional. And, you know, somebody described him as one of the best poets ever. And I can believe that.
Are particular titles coming to mind? I know what you're saying about, you know, the range of his songs, but...
Well, he wrote a song called Bad Girl. And, you know, that's been very appropriate to a lot of situations in my life over the years. You know, you're not a bad girl. You just want to be free. And you know, we all do what we have to do without meaning to step on other people's emotions. But that's kind of the way it turns out. You know, that whole Motown sort of golden decade, you know, we all sort of relate to all of the groups. But, yeah, Smokey Robinson and the Miracles really are more important to me than most.
So, in as you've grown up, then you say you sort of missed the British invasion, and then has there been any music, you know, since? And this is a theory that musicologists hold, that, you know, the music you listen to between the ages of 12 and 24 or so is what you hang on to the most. So what about your experiences with music since then? Anything moving you like those early days?
Nothing at all. No doubt in my mind, you know. I think there's a couple of reasons for that. One is, you know, for the last 25 years or so, I haven't had a television. So I miss out on music videos and all that stuff. And I really don't listen to the radio that much. So, you know, people talk about these new, very popular groups, and I have no clue what they're talking about. You know, and maybe I'm just stuck in the past, but, you know, probably after 70s soul, I didn't listen to anything. You know, so that's probably the most recent stuff that that I heard on a daily basis on the radio. The very few pieces that I've heard in the last, say, 10 or 15 years, with all due respect to the artists, don't impress me.
So do you listen outside of your show? I mean, do you listen to music? The old music, like, do you have tapes, records? Do you entertain yourself with music, or is it just the 3 hours you're on the air each week?
I don't even have a record player at home. The only tape recorder I have is the cassette recorder that I do interviews with. I finally got something other than a portable radio at home to listen to the radio. So, no, I don't, unless, of course, you know, I'll take a couple of CDs of some oldies over to my girlfriend's house and listen to it over there. But mostly what I hear is now, and certainly for the last 20 years, is what I play on the radio on Saturday nights.
Let me see if there was some other hole I wanted to get to here. Artist songs. Oh, okay. Well, if you were born in 1944, and you were, sounds like you were making a connection to, you know, Alan Freed's rock and roll show, and then in 1956, there's the Elvis Presley sensation. Now, what, as a 14, 15, 16-year-old, I'm not going to buy it if you tell me that you didn't know that Elvis Presley was happening. So what about that?
Well, as with most guys, I think, in the 50s, there was sort of a dichotomy in relationship to Elvis Presley. A lot of us wanted to look like him, and maybe some of us wanted to act like him and sing like him, but on one hand, and on the other hand, we were a little bit put off, to be polite, because all the girls liked Elvis. That's a very understatement, big understatement, but, you know, I mean, I can remember, you know, a few girls I knew in high school thinking that that I looked a bit like Elvis Presley, and that certainly was fine with me. But, you know, Elvis was only popular for a couple of years, from, say, 56 to 58, and then he went in the Army, and in my opinion, end of story. You know, his music changed, and I think his popularity changed, and then he started doing all those beach blanket bingo movies, and so between 56 and 58, you know, Elvis Presley, I actually liked his music. That was one of the few white artists that that I liked their music. I can remember people thinking, when, especially when Elvis was popular, that rock and roll was really the work of the devil. And we were all in for a big problem unless something was done about rock and roll. And also, a lot of people thought it was only going to be a fad, you know, that it was going to last for a few years and then go away, which, of course, it didn't.
So you say you liked the music, but you weren't what you would call an active fan or whatever, or can you expand on that a little bit with Elvis?
Well, I never had the money to collect any records. His records or anybody else, you know. I can remember maybe having 6 or 8 45s when I was a teenager. So I just didn't have the money to buy records, and I of course thought it was kind of dumb. Why buy a record when you could turn on the radio and hear the same record every hour or so, you know. I wish I'd have known that, you know, they were going to be worth hundreds of dollars. And I think they cost, I don't know, a quarter or something. But, you know, there was another group that impacted me for one night, actually. I went to a concert that the group The Angels had. And it was at the Pleasure Beach Ballroom in Bridgeport, Connecticut. And for some reason, the three girls in the group danced with three of us, and I was one of them. And you know, I had them sign my 45 record jacket, and the one that I danced with said, you know, thanks for the dance. And I wish I still had that, but I don't think I do. But I was certainly impressed by the Angels for one night.
Okay, I'm compelled to ask, if you said you had 6 or 8 45s, could you possibly remember what some of those were?
Oh, man. Well, other than the Angels record, I had, for some reason, Buzz, Buzz, Buzz by the Hollywood Flames. And that's really the only one I ever remember having. I know I had a few others, but that was one of them.
All right. Anything else that was rolling around in your mind as you were thinking about this interview today?
Well, other than I think it's kind of ironic that, you know, I'm playing the same things on Saturday night, the same songs. I'm playing the same songs on Saturday night that I liked to listen to 40 years ago. And they still seem as fresh and as musical and as, for some reason, important to me now as they did 4 decades ago.